This week's parsha is Parshas Tetzaveh. In Parshas Tetzaveh, we're going to focus on chapter 28. Chapter 28, there are a total of 43 psukim that deal with the special clothing of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and the Kohanim, the Kohen Hedyot. Eight garments that had to be worn by the Kohen Gadol, four garments that had to be worn by the Kohen Hedyot. A parsha that spends a great deal of time talking about garments. Garments, incidentally, and maybe it's not that incidental, garments are extremely important in the framework of Torah. Remember, the first set of garments that were made for Adam and Chava were made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. After their sin, after the sin of Adam and Chava, and they felt that they are naked, they went and they made for themselves garments made of fig leaves. But it seems that the Rebbeinu Shlomo was unhappy with the fig leaf garment, and therefore what he did was, God made for Adam and his wife garments of leather, but more than that, not only did he make the garments for them, but he put the garments on them. It may even indicate that they were perfectly happy with the garments that they had sewn for themselves. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo is unhappy with those garments. And therefore, he makes for them katnot or, he makes for them garments of leather, vayal bishay. There is a very powerful and a deep essay that was written by Rav Soloveitchik, where he deals with the significance of the katnot or, the garments of leather that were made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I just want to give you a few of the points that he makes as an introduction to the parsha that we're going to deal with. I am not going to do the Rav justice, believe me. I just want to give you a number of the points that are made by the Rav. He says that when the Torah talks about garments, Torah means not only garments for the body, but garments for the soul. A human being can be physically naked, and one can be emotionally, spiritually, and culturally naked. And garments are necessary for the human being. He needs physical garments, and he needs emotional garments. He needs spiritual garments, he needs cultural garments. Yeshayahu talks about spiritual garments. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu. It's the Haftorah of Parashas Nitzavim. Sos osiz b'Hashem, I will be full of joy in God. Togel nafshi be'elokoi, my soul will be happy with my God. Ki hil bishani bigde yesha mi'il tzedakoya atani. He cloaked me in bigde yesha, the garments of salvation, umi'il tzedakah, the cloak of tzedakah, he covered me with it. Obviously, bigde yesha and mi'il tzedakah are not physical garments. Bigde yesha and mi'il tzedakah are the garments for the soul, for the neshama. The Rav says that bigde yesha represents the idea of faith. Not only do we believe in the Rebbeinu Shlomo, but we believe that ultimately the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to come to our aid, to our assistance. He is our salvation. The soul needs that very, very badly. Otherwise, man falls into depression. Mi'il tzedakah, the cloak of tzedakah, Torah and mitzvahs. The Rav, of course, talks about the idea that the modern man, contemporary man, is spiritually naked. He is empty. Goes through a whole life, and then all of a sudden he turns around. Like, what was it that he accomplished? Attempted to conquer a world, make loads of money, and the end was that he neglected his family and those closest to him, and so he finds himself empty, naked, nothing. He looks at himself in the mirror, and he's not terribly happy with what he sees. The garments that Adam and Chava made for themselves were from the fig tree. The Gemara says the tree from which they ate was a fig tree. What the garments they made for themselves, what that's symbolic of, man may very well want to cover up his failings, justify, rationalize, it wasn't that terrible, it wasn't so bad. It means that there are two kinds of garments. There are garments that cover, conceal ugliness. And spiritually, it may be the ugliness of man. He doesn't want to see himself and look at himself to see what he really is. The fig leaf is the cover-up, that which is to conceal the ugly, the unsavory. The garments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes for Adam and his wife are garments that are to accentuate the positive and the beautiful and bring out that which is most significant in man. Garments, therefore, can be something completely external and superficial, or garments can also represent something that gives substance, meaning, beauty, majesty, and grandeur to the human being. Beautiful clothing, even in a physical sense, is that which shows the person off best. Those are the katnot, or the garments of leather that were made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says that in the Sefer Torah of Rab Meir, it said katnot or, and the word or was spelled not with an ayin, but was spelled with an aleph. They were garments of light. They were garments that illuminated the inner human being. The inner human being. Rav becomes very dramatic and passionate when he talks about the two Talmidim of Reb Meir. One was Rabbi Akiva, and the other was Elisha ben Avuya. He describes the agony and the pain of Rabbi Akiva's life and his ultimate tragic, brutal death, cruel death at the hands of the Romans. But Rabbi Akiva remains up until today a source of great inspiration for Klal Yisrael. He became the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. Elisha ben Avuya is the one who, while he may very well have had great honor, he most probably lived well because he had betrayed the Jewish people to Rome. Lived very well. But in the end, he died a lonely man, all alone, rejected by his people, forgotten forever. Means nothing. So there are the externals that don't really count, and there is the inner human being. The garments of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the big day Yesha and the Mi'il Tzedakah, are the ones that bring out the inner human being. I'll just give one example that the Rav brings. There's a night that a lot of people don't sleep. There's a night that a lot of people don't sleep. Ahasuerus doesn't sleep. What night doesn't Ahasuerus sleep? He was invited that day to a party by Esther, and only one other person was invited to the party, and that one other person was Haman. At that party, Ahasuerus asks Esther, "What is it that you want of me?" So she says, all I want is come tomorrow to another party, you and Haman, and then I'll tell the king what it is that I want. This was the day on which Esther, after having fasted for 3 days, came to Ahasuerus, taking her life into her hands, because what would happen in the event that the king would not extend to her the golden scepter? Anybody who comes to the king uninvited, Ahaz Dosolam is death. Esther takes the chance, and just at the last moment, he extends the golden scepter, and in comes Esther. Party one. What happens to Haman when he walks out of the first party? He sees Mordechai sitting there. Velo kam, velo zom imenu. Mordechai doesn't get up. Mordechai doesn't even shake. Nothing. It makes absolutely no difference there. The fact that Haman is walking by makes no difference. And this is at a point in time already where we know that Haman is, he's Hitler. He's Arafat. He wants to destroy all of the Jewish people. Haman goes home. He's very upset. He comes home. He tells his wife, I'm terribly upset. All of the honor and the glory and the dignity, everything that I have is worthless and meaningless to me every time I see this fellow Mordechai the Jew who doesn't bow nor bend before me. So she gives him good advice. All that you have to do is make a gallows 50 cubits high, and tomorrow you'll go to the king and tell the king you want to hang Mordechai, and that's it. Mordechai will be hung. Simple. It seems he can't wait till the morning. He doesn't sleep that night, so he goes off to the king. The king can't sleep that night. Why doesn't he sleep that night? Because he can't for the life of him figure out what is it that Esther has in mind. Esther must be plotting something. She invites only two people to the party, me and Haman, and she only wants the two of us to come tomorrow to the party. What's happening? Therefore, he has them open the Book of Chronicles to see is there anybody who had once done something for the king and the king had never rewarded him. Who else doesn't sleep that night? Balayla hahu nodedosh nas hamelech, that night, the king of the whole world, the eternal king, also doesn't sleep, because he is in the process of beginning the salvation of Klal Yisrael. Haman comes to Ahasuerus in the middle of the night in order to ask him for permission to hang Mordechai. Ahasuerus hears somebody walking out in the garden, so he says, Mi Bechotzer, who's out there? And they said, Haman is Bechotzer. Yavo, let him come, Vayavo Haman, and Haman comes. So what happens when Haman comes? Ahasuerus asks him, what should we do for the person whom the king wishes to honor? So what is the great response of Haman? Yavil Levush, let them bring a garment that was worn by the king, and a horse upon which the king had been, and one upon whom the crown of the king. Yaviu levush malchus asher lovash bo hamelech, v'sus asher rochav alav hamelech, v'asher nitan keter malchut b'rosho, and that had the crown upon his head, take him through the streets and say, kocha yeyosel ish, so shall be done for the man asher hamelech hafeitz b'yikaro. What kind of garments are we talking about over here? We're talking about something that's completely show. There is absolutely no substance, no meaning, no significance to it whatsoever. Because what's a kashverosh? Ahasuerus is also all externals. What? He makes a party for 180 days for what? In order to show Yakor, Teferes, Gedulah, So, Yomim, Rabim, Shmonim, Razim, 180 days, he's showing off the wealth. Wealth that's not really his, but he wants to show it off. He's making believe that this is all his wealth, and everybody is buying this idea. Haman and Ahasuerus are living in the world of the external and the superficial, and therefore everything that Haman says to him is all superficial, meaning that those are garments that attempt to cover up ugliness. The garments of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are garments that are supposed to accentuate the beautiful in a human being. We're going to have to get back to the garments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made for man and his wife in order to understand the parasha here. 43 psukim talking about the garments of for the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hegel. What's the point of these garments? So first of all, in chapter 28, pasuk 2, it says, "Va'asisa bigdei kodesh la'aron achicha." You should make garments that are holy for your brother Aaron, lechavod, for honor, ulitif odet, and for beauty, for honor and for beauty. Says the Ramban, for honor and for beauty, sheyeh nirbod umefo'ar, he should be honorable and beautiful. Aaron should be beautiful, b'malbushim nirbodim umefo'arim, with garments that are honorable and beautiful. Ki eila habegodim, these garments that were made for Aaron were levushei malchus, they were the garments of royalty, royal raiments. The Netziv says the purpose of these garments so that Aaron should be nirbod, should be honored, ve'enei habriyot, in the eyes of people. What it means is that Torah recognizes that external beauty has influence and impact. People are moved by it. And the Torah therefore is saying, yes, we are permitted, more than that, we are commanded to utilize the attractiveness of garments for the purpose at hand. The purpose at hand is the dignity and the station of Aaron and the Kohanim. So therefore, yes, garments do have an influence on people. People are attracted by beautiful garments. So therefore, beauty is here recognized by the Torah as a legitimate means to accomplish a good end. More than that, the Sefer HaChinuch takes another approach. The approach of the Sefer HaChinuch is something similar to the approach that he takes throughout all of Torah. The Sefer HaChinuch lists the 613 mitzvahs, and by each one of the mitzvahs he says, what is the Shodesh HaMitzvah? What is the root or the meaning of the mitzvah? What is its purpose? So one of the approaches that's taken by many mitzvahs, by the Chinuch, is man is influenced by what he does. Halavavot nimshachim acharei ha'pu'ulot. A person's heart is follows and it's drawn by what a person does. What we do becomes habit. It becomes what we are. Therefore, the Chinuch says the following: Ki ha'adam nifal lefi pu'ulotav, because a person acts and he is influenced by what he does. Va'achareihem nimshachim kavanotav u'machshevotav. His intentions and his thoughts follow his actions. The way we act is the way we begin to think. Therefore, hashliach ha'mechape, the one who is going to be our messenger for atonement, tzorich lahatfis kol machshavto v'kavanato el ha'avodah. The Kohen who is going to be the one who is going to achieve atonement and forgiveness for us before God, all of his intentions and all of his thoughts have to be to the task at hand. When he makes a korban, the korban has to be l'shem korban, l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven and for the sake of kapara. Therefore, what the Torah wanted is, wherever he would look, there would be something staring him in the face that would remind him of his station, remind him of what he's doing, so that all of his kavana and all of his machshava, his thoughts, should all be for the purpose at hand. It means, therefore, according to the Ramban and the Netziv, the purpose of the garments were for people who see the Kohen, those who are to be influenced by him. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, the purpose of the garments of the Kohen Gadol were for himself, so that he should feel different. He should feel different. In all three that we just mentioned, the two positions that are taken, be it the Ramban and the Netziv on one side, or the Sefer HaChinuch on the other side, whether it's for the purpose of people who will see the Kohen Gadol so that he should have great respect, or that he himself should remember constantly what it is that he's doing, that all only talks about the external dimension of the garments, but that in and of itself does not explain the garments of the Kohen Gadol or Hedyot, because there's another a completely different dimension. The last pasuk in this perek, pasuk 43, V'hoyu al Aaron v'al banav, they shall be upon Aaron and his sons before Ohel Moed when they come to Ohel Moed, when they come into the tent of meeting. Oh, when they go close to the Mizbeach, Lishareis Bakodesh, to serve in the place that is holy. Velo Yisu Avon Vametu, they should not carry a sin and die. That means not to wear the garments punishable by death. So that means these garments are not just for external beauty or influence. There's something a great deal deeper, a penalty of death, Misa min Hashemayim, for not having worn the garments. And it means not only not wearing the garments. What happens if one of the details of the garment was not made properly? If one detail is missing, he's wearing all of the garments except one thing. One thing is not correct. Penalty of death. Penalty of death. More than that, the Kohen is a Kohen and can function as such only if he's wearing the garments. The Gemara says the following: Bizman shebigdehem aleihem, when their garments are upon them, kohunatam aleihem, their priesthood is upon them. Ein kohunatam aleihem, ein bigdehem aleihem, if their garments are not on them, ein kohunatam aleihem, their priesthood is not upon them. Do you know what the halacha is saying? Clothes make the Kohen. He's a Kohen and can function as such only if he's wearing the garments. He's not wearing the garments. Kein Kohen ist. It's no Kohen. There is another halacha. These garments, even if they will be made precisely according to the instructions of Torah, precisely, however one part was not made lishma, the person who makes it, even when the thread is prepared, the person who makes it has to make it with the intent lishma, that this is l'shem, for the sake of Big Day Kohen Gadol. In the event that it was not done lishma, no good. It means, therefore, that the begadim of the Kohen Gadol are not merely for the external show. Which brings us to another Gemara. The Gemara says, "Lom onis mechob parshas korbanos le parshas bigdei kohuna." The parsha that comes immediately after the parsha of bigdei kohuna is the parsha of korbanos, of sacrifices. So the Gemara asks, why are these two parshas next to one another? Says the Gemara, in order to teach you, just like karbanos are a source of atonement, so too the garments of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot have the power lechaper, to atone and to forgive. Do you understand? Garments have the power to be mechaper. And the Gemara says, tonet, the shirt of the Kohen Gadol is mechaper on the sin of shvichas damim, murder. Michnosayim pants on the chaperim al giliadayus, on illicit relationships. Avnei mechaperet al hirur alev, the belt of the Kohen Gadol is a kapora for evil thoughts, so forth and so on. Each one of the garments is in and of itself a source of atonement, which means that we're not talking about garments that are merely for the external grandeur and beauty of the Kohen Gadol, something for the eye of the beholder. There's something more of it. Which brings us back to the beginning of Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put man in the world and gave him the task of Tifshuha, conquer. Take hold of the world, harness the forces of nature, utilize the world, don't abuse it, but use it. And then it was left to man to channel those forces. Man had to discover the wheel. Man discovered fire. Man even discovered the harp.
Men discovered how to work with metal. All of these are told to us in Sefer Bereishis. From the very beginning of time, when man made these great discoveries and strides forward, until today, modern technology, man is capable of sending satellites into space. He can split the atom. All of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu left up to the ingenuity of man. I gave you a cup, use your cup. Only one thing he made for man. Didn't make the wheel for him, didn't split the atom for him, but he made clothing for him. Made clothing for him. And man, who already understood that he needs clothing because he had made his own clothing already before. The one thing God makes for man is clothing. And then, of course, the only other place where we have there's a mitzvah to make clothing precisely to the specifications of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It would mean the following. The idea of clothing, therefore, is not merely utilitarian. The purpose of clothing is not so that we should be warm on a cold night in shul. Clothing is not simply for the external comfort of the human being. There is something about clothing that bespeaks the humanity of man, his morality. The only ones who don't need clothing are those who belong to the animal kingdom. There is something about garments which are a source of honor and dignity for the man, because it turns man into an ethical and a moral individual. That's what clothing is all about. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'chvodo u'b'yatzmo, he alone went and he created. He made that first set of garments. And not only did he make it for them, but he put the garments on them. It would mean the following. You know how you're really supposed to look at it? The Rebbeinu Shalom created two layers for man. The completion of Maaseh Bereishis, the completion of creation, was not when God made the outer skin of the human being. He made a second set of skin for him. There is something about clothing that represents the higher purpose of man. He's different. He's different. Fascinating, of course, that those human beings that haven't learned about clothing yet haven't moved ahead technologically either. There's something lacking in the spirituality of the human being who has not learned the meaning of clothing. Let's say the following. What the Kohen is in the Migdash, man is in the world. I'll say it again. The Kohen who serves in the Migdash needs a special uniform. Man is the one who serves in the sanctuary of the world. And as a servant of God in the sanctuary of the world, he too must have garments. And the completion of his creation comes through clothing. Clothing, as the Rav says, not clothing that's going to conceal the ugliness of man, but clothing that is going to bring out the beauty of the human being. Not modern man who may very well attempt to shut out and block out and cover up and conceal his failings, his weakness, his inability to truly rise to greatness. There are all sorts of cover-ups. The Rav gets very dramatic at the end of his essay, where he talks about two women that cry. Who are the two women that he talks about? Rachel, Mevakwa al Boneha. Rachel cries for her children. Me'anolhi nachen. She refuses to be comforted. Refuses to be consoled.
until Hashem says to her, I promise you, Yesh sachol lefulateich, there is reward for that which you do, Yesh tikvah lacharitech, and there's hope for your very end. V'shavu may eretz oyev, they will return from the land of the enemy. V'shavu banam legvulam, your sons shall return to their boundaries. There's another woman who cries. At the end of Shiraz Devorah, at the end of the Song of Devorah, Sisra's mother, the mother of Sisra, is looking out the window and she's waiting for Sisra to come home, and it says Vatiyabev Aim Sisra, the mother of Sisra is moaning, and in the Shira, in the Song of Devorah, Devorah describes how her ladies in waiting are telling her, don't worry, you know what happened today, there must have been so much spoil and so much loot. It's taking so much time for them to divide it all. He'll be home soon. Bal kin sistala, the chachkala is coming home right away. And it says, she looks out of the window, Vatiyabev ein Sisra, and the mother of Sisra moans and cries, Ba'ad ha'eshnad. From out of a little window, you can imagine the little windows out of a castle, right? Out of a castle. So she's looking, and she says, "Madua boshe shirich bolavo? Why is his chariot tarrying from coming home? Madua echeru pa'amei merkavotav? Why?" Why is he late? Why hasn't his chariot come home yet? Chachmo saro seha tanena, the wise ladies in waiting answer her, and afhi toshiv amorehelo, they give an answer, and she also telling herself the same thing. Halo yimtsu yichalku shalom, they found and they're dividing all of the spoil. Racham rachamatayim l'rosh geva, one Jewish woman or two for each man. Shlouts for im lesisro, garments of all sorts of beautiful colors for Sisra. Shlouts for im rikma, beautiful clothing, all embroidered. Tseva rikma sayim letzavarei shalol, and all sorts of beautiful clothing, embroidered, colored. It ends there. The last pasuk comes now. Kein yovdu kol yevecha Hashem, so shall all of your enemies be destroyed, says Devorah. What's happening over here is that as Sisra's mother is looking out of the window, what's really going on in her mind is, she doesn't say it, she wants to cover it up, she wants to conceal it. A whole lifetime she raised a killer. She raised a Hitler. And in the back of her mind, someday maybe the end will be the crime doesn't pay. Someday he may not come home. But she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to face it. She's asking the question, well, why isn't he coming? She's moaning, she's groaning. And they tried to cover up. Talking about clothing, they try to cover up. The ugly truth, the mother of Sisra already knows the ugly truth. Sisra is not coming home. She raised a killer, and he is a Rasha, and ultimately she has to come face to face with him. She most probably encouraged him throughout her lifetime. Sure, she encouraged him. Back in the back of her mind, she must probably she made certain not to think about it. She lived with the glory, not with the fear and the pain. On the other hand, Rachel, the Rav says the difference between bechi or crying and batiyabev. Megitzach agute givein, meveintzachos, it is der besach of an hartzen. There's no way to say that in English. You cry yourself out and it becomes better on the heart. All right. Because
There's something
about a Yiddish gevein that there's the feeling like the Rebbein Shem had. He knows very well. Bechiya, crying of Rachel, is a crying that's full of hope, no despair. Vatiyabed Ein Sisra, that moaning is absolute despair. The cover-up is over. She has to face it finally, that she had created a monster and the monster is fallen. The purpose of clothing, kosnos or, the garments of light. The garments of light are garments where the human being is able to see himself in the splendor of his humanity, in the beauty and the majesty of an ethical, moral Torah individual. The fig leaves of Adam and Chava are the cover-up, attempting to conceal the ugly. Let's take a few minutes and deal with two of the garments of the Kohen Gadol. They're really all part of one garment, the Choshen and the Ephod. The Choshen and the Ephod. Let's learn a few psukim and just a number of ideas about the Choshen and the Ephod. In chapter 28, pasuk 6, but also as Ephod. As my Rebbe used to say, and I tell you every so often, you have to hold the finger on the place, because we're going to skip around a little bit. They should make the ephod out of gold and blue wool and purple wool and red wool and linen, ma'asei choshev. The ephod was something like an apron, except that it had a front and a back. The front and the back were connected by something like suspenders. That was the ephod. The ephod were the suspenders going over and the entire garment. Now on these suspenders, on the top, on the shoulders, there were two avnei shoham, two precious stones. As the pasuk says, pasuk 9, v'lokachta shtei avnei shoham, you should take two stones of Shoam, upitachta aleim shmot bnei Yisrael, you are to engrave upon them the names of the children of Israel. Shishom yishmotam al ha'evan o'achat v'etshmot ha'shisha ha'notarim al ha'evan ha'shenit ketolotam. Six names on one stone, six names on the other stone, in the order of their birth. In Ma'asei Chorosh, it has to be done by an artisan, a Chorosh Evan, one who's an artisan of stone, one who knows how to engrave. Pituchei Chotam tefatach et shteif avonim al shmot b'nei Yisrael. There was a setting, and in the setting you had the Avnei Shoam, six names of the six tribes on one, and names of the other six on the other. Now, coming down from these suspenders was the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, the Choshen. I mean, I'll even take a moment. There's nothing as good as a picture is worth a thousand words. I'm showing a picture of the Choshen, and this is the ephod, the backside of the ephod. Here is the Here is the front side of the ephod. Okay. And here is the Choshen Mishpat in the middle, and the two epaulets with the Avnei Shoham. Now, Pasuk 15, Vasita Choshen Mishpat, you should make the Choshen Mishpat, Maasei Choshen, Kemaasei Ephod Taasenu, you should make it the same way you made the Ephod. What the Choshen Mishpat really was, imagine two squares. The size was a span, two perfect squares, and then they're going to be folded over, and they're going to be four rows of three stones each, 3 times 4, 12 stones. Each one is going to have the name of a tribe on it. Inside the folds, known only to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol put the Shem Hashem was on the inside. That's the Poshet Mishpat. Question that we have. Tell me. The Shem Hashem turned the Choshen Mishpat into the Urim V'Tumim. When it had the Shem Hashem in it, and a king or a leader of Israel had to ask a question, he would stand before the Choshen Mishpat, and he would ask the question, and then the Choshen Mishpat would light up, different letters would light up, and on the basis of the letters there would be an answer. David asked, should we go up against the enemy or not? And the letters, Ayin, Lamed, Hey, Ale, go up. Or, Al Talel, don't go up. But it's a square. The question that I want to deal with is simply, if you already have the names of the 12 tribes on the two Avnei Shoam, what do I need the names of the 12 tribes again on the Poshet Mishpat? Why the two? By the way, just in passing, the names of all of the 12 tribes don't have all the letters of the Aleph Beis. There are four letters that are missing. Tzadik, Chet, Kuf, and Tet. In order to make up the Tzadik, Chet, Kuf, in addition to the 12 tribes, they also engraved Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. So I understand what you're going to ask. You could have taken care of three of the four by just writing Yitzchak, right? If Tzadik, Ches, and Kuf are missing, Yitzchak alone would have taken care of it. The only thing is the Avos are one unit. You can't. Yitzchak is inseparable from Avraham and from Yaakov. There's one other letter that still is missing, and that's the Tet. So there's a machloket, I believe it's Bavli and Yerushalmi, either Shivtei Yisrael or Shivtei Yeshurun, the tribes of Yeshurun or the tribes of Israel. And in Shivtei, you already have the Tet. All right, but let's get back to the question that we want to deal with. What do I need if I have the 12 names here already? What do I need the 12 names here? And why indeed in one place is it on two stones and the other place it's on 12 stones? And furthermore, third question. The Urim V'Tumim, if you had to ask what we should do, that question was asked and the answer came from the Choshen Mishpat. The fact is, the Rebbeinu could have made the answer come from the Avnei Shoam that are on the shoulders, but that's not where the answer came from. The answer came from the Choshen Mishpat, the 12 stones, not the two. The idea that is here being expressed by Torah is the following. Klal Yisrael is made up of 12 tribes. 12 tribes. Is it simple to take 12 tribes and turn them into one people? Is it possible to take people from all over the world and turn them into one absolutely harmonious nation? Is that really possible? I'm afraid to use the word. To create a harmonious blending of people requires a tahalich, a process. There are good tahalichs and there are bad tahalichs. It requires a tahalich. I mean, one could claim, of course, listen, you want to turn people into one nation, the tribes into one nation, command, coerce. This is it, the Rebbeinu says you're one people. That's one way of doing it. The other, of course, is the tahalich, something that's going to take place over a long period of time. We know already the mistakes of melting people and turning them into one people. So much of the beauty of the difference between people is destroyed in the process. We know, of course, the problems that that process caused right here in Eretz Yisrael. You can't take people from all over the world and make no allowances whatsoever for individual differences. You can't turn everybody into an Ashkenazi. And we refuse to be turned into Sephardim. Can't do it. There's a process. There's a process. And you have to be patient with that process. And in that process, one must understand that maybe in the final analysis, each one of the tribes should retain its unique individuality. Yaakov gives them brachas, and Moshe gives them brachas, Parshat Vayechi and Parshat Zot HaBracha, and he points out the unique strengths and the talents of each and every one of the tribes, and these are the things that should remain forever part of the distinction of the tribe. And that's the way in which each tribe is going to contribute its share to Klal Yisrael. Does the Rabbeinu Shalom want that all Jews should be clones of one another? All the beauty would go out of Yahadut. Yahadut is able to embrace and encompass within itself people of all sorts and all kinds. There are a lot of roads that lead to the Rabbeinu Shalom. There can talk about Hasidim and Misnagdim and Jews from all parts of the world. And each one has. However, in one respect, we can't wait for a process. There's one area in which we cannot wait for the process. We can't wait that, you know, 500 years down the line, all of these people are going to be one. What must happen immediately when tribes become a people is to carry the responsibility. The Klal Yisrael responsibility, all have to share that responsibility equally. To use maybe a more graphic term, to shoulder the responsibilities of Klal Yisrael, that must come immediately. That has to come immediately. The Avnei Shoham on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol represent the idea that in terms of the growth and the development and the protection and the safety of Klal Yisrael, everybody carries that responsibility from day one, immediately. In the longer view of time, maybe the tribal distinctions and differences are going to become less sharp. They're going to blend, but we don't want them to blend completely. We want them to retain what is uniquely theirs. However, when it was a question of deciding what course Klal Yisrael should take, you didn't ask the Avnei Shoham, you asked the Choshen Mishpat. Why did you ask the Choshen Mishpat? You asked the Choshen Mishpat because the Choshen Mishpat takes into consideration the needs, the individual needs of all of the Shvatim. And when steps are to be taken for Klal Yisrael, one cannot simply set aside the needs of one sector of Klal Yisrael and we're going to go ahead and do what we want. The asking the Urim V'Tumim was so that the Urim V'Tumim, by taking into consideration the individual needs of each one of the tribes, only then would the Urim V'Tumim say, do or don't do, go up or don't go up. One cannot simply reject the needs of one sector of the population. I'm going to do what I feel is best, regardless of whether it's good for you or not. And maybe if we have to sacrifice one segment of the population for the well-being or what we think is the well-being of the other sector of the population, we'll do that. No. Urim V'Tumim were 12 stones. And the 12 stones, therefore, symbolize every one of the tribes. They all have needs. And their needs have to be met. I can't simply reject one part of the population for the other. One other question I'll deal with briefly. So we have the two stones, Then we have the 12. And I had pointed out that in the middle of the folds of the Choshen Mishpat was the Shem Hashem. Shem Hashem. Is that the only place where the Shem Hashem appears in the garments of the Kohen Gadol? No. One of the garments of the Kohen Gadol was the tzitz. The tzitz was a gold plate over his brow that said Kodesh LaHashem. Why does he need the Shem Hashem twice? Why does it have to be once within the folds of the Choshen Mishpat and the other on his brow? I'll make it brief. Who sees the Shem Hashem that's on the Kohen Gadol's brow? Everybody else, not him. Who knows or who sees the Shem Hashem that is placed in the folds of the Choshen Mishpat? The Kohen Gadol. The order of the garments, the order in which he put on the garments was very specific. The Choshen went on before he put on the tzitz. Which means that what the Torah is telling the Kohen Gadol, the Shem Hashem that he knows about, the one that's on his heart, that precedes the one that he shows off to the rest of the world. What the Torah is telling is the Kohen Gadol is, you must perfect yourself first, and only then can you be the one who is going to project the image of the priesthood to Klal Yisrael. Kishot atzmacha, first adorn yourself, and then kishot acherim, adorn others. Where else do we have this idea? Two other places, the same idea is expressed by Torah. Tefillin. First thing is tefillin sheyad, tefillin on the hand, and second is tefillin shel rosh, tefillin of the head. Tefillin shel rosh, the Gemara says about it, v'ro chol am ha'aretz, all of the people of the earth shall see, ki shem Hashem nikra alecha, that the name of God is called upon you, there's the shin and there's the dalet. So the tefillin shel rosh is for the world. The tefillin sheyad is for me. Tefillin sheyad are supposed to be near the heart. Which one are you supposed to put on first? First you put on tefillin sheyad, and then you put on tefillin shel rosh. The idea of putting on tefillin sheyad first is that I have to have God, those four parshios, Shema Yisrael, near my heart first, before I go and present myself to the world as the one who preaches Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. One other place. The halacha says that a king had to have two Sifrei Torah. One that was Munachas, the base kinoz of one Sefer Torah that was with him at home, and then there was another Sefer Torah that the king always had with him on his arm wherever he went. The Sefer Torah at home is his personal Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah that he takes wherever he goes is the Sefer Torah that he preaches to Klal Yisrael. But he has to first be a man of Torah first before he is able to go out and be the one who is going to preach Torah to others. We have taken just a brief look at the significance of the garments of the Kohen Gadol and the garments of the Kohen Hedyot and the idea of garments in general. When you get further into Tanakh, one Sefer that has to be studied and can only be understood when we fully comprehend the idea of garments of Sefer, Shmuel Aleph. Shmuel Aleph is a Sefer that is full of symbolism of garments, people putting on garments, taking off garments, garments that are torn, and it all comes back to the idea that remember, in Hebrew, a garment is a beged. What other word do we have in the word beged? Bogade. Bogade is a traitor. Garments can be used to conceal, or they can be used to reveal. The bogade, I imagine, is the fellow who wears sunglasses and a trench coat, you know, a raincoat with the lapels up. But it means more than that. The bogade that we're talking about here is the one who betrays himself. The beged, the garment, is that which is to show off the person for what he really is, that he should know what he really is, not fool himself. The bogade is the one who betrays himself. There's a great deal of symbolism with regard to clothing. Mi'ez Hashem, We'll get back to it one of these days.